Well, good evening and welcome. This is Mike Harris on RentsRadio.com, and today is Thursday, December 5th, 2013. And I'm very pleased to have as my special guest this evening, author and writer, Mr. Harold Covington. Harold, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
Yes, can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you now. You sound great. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good.
How you been? Haven't talked to you in a month of Sundays, as my grandmother would say.
Well, I'm able to sit up and take a little nourishment from time to time. I've been finishing up with Freedom Sons, not just the publication of the book, but getting it out to various people who need their complimentary copies, and including yourself.
Well, by the way, I want to thank you for my autographed complimentary copy. I think it is a fascinating novel. I've read it cover to cover, not this particular version. This is the one I'm keeping for posterity, but I have read the book. And I tell you, folks, if you haven't read Freedom Sons or any of the Northwest novels, they're fun. They're fun to read. They're action. They're adventure. They're deceit, betrayal, loyalty, comradeship, romance, death. It's all in there. It's a fun read.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I really did. And the social commentary in there is very powerful as well. And, you know, a lot of people need to focus on that, should focus on it, because it states things that are pretty obvious. And one of the things that I rant about and rail against is our incompetent government in this country and how they have mismanaged this country. There's two ways of thinking about this. Either they are the worst bungling managers that there ever were, our elected officials, and our form of government is a colossal failure because of mismanagement, or there's something more insidious, that we've been infiltrated and that we're being taken down by an alien group that's trying to destroy this country. So a foreign intelligence agency has infiltrated our government.
I think a lot of people over the years have wondered about the nature and the character of the people who are ruling us, what's going on in their minds, and gets back to the ancient question of, are these people fools or are they rogues, as our ancestors would have said. And I've always said that there is no reason why they can't be both. We have in this country's government a almost historically unique combination of incompetence and evil that is really freaky. And one of the things I'm trying to do in Freedom Sons, which is the last novel in the Northwest series, it portrays, as you know, the first 50 years of the Northwest American Republic as an independent nation. But I also try to show what is likely to happen in the United States if nothing is done. And a large part of the book, as you know, has to do with events outside the Republic. And I think that even if my prophetic powers have failed, and even if we don't get our own independent nation in the Northwest or anywhere else, I think my predictions as to what's going to happen in America in the next 50 years are pretty spot on, or if nothing else, I'm probably a little bit optimistic. So I would like to encourage everybody to obtain the five Northwest independence novels and read them, and it's not just because I'm an author trying to drum up business for my wares, so to speak. It's because these books were written with a purpose. These books are not just fiction written to entertain. They're not just political polemics. I intended them as a warning to the white population of North America as to what is going to happen if we don't do something about this mess that we are in.
Well, Harold, it's not just the white population of North America. Look at the white population of Europe. Look at the white population of South Africa. Look at the white population in Australia. Anywhere there were majority white countries have been flooded with illegal immigrants, even the legal immigrants that are coming in. And I had Frosty Wooldridge on the show, I think it was Tuesday, Wednesday night, I forget. But we were talking about the immigration problem, where we're taking in 100,000 new legal immigrants every day. And you know what? These are not scientists. These are not engineers. These are not white. They're Somalis. They're Nigerians. They're Ethiopians. They're all the stuff you don't want moving in next door to you.
Well, and you notice where the government is sending all these African primitives. They're sending them to Maine and Wisconsin and Iowa. They admit in Washington, D.C. that they have a deliberate policy of trying to blockbust or break up the largely white areas in the interior and the extremities of the country. It has to do not only with imposing racial diversity, so-called, on these all-white areas and all the joys that come with that, but I think it has to do with breaking up the white and Republican voting blocks in these all-white areas to eventually try and dilute what's left of the voting strength of the remaining slim white majority in this country. But I think the ultimate tactical goal of the system's policy is to create a one-party state and ensure perpetual power for the Democrat Party. That, I think, has a lot to do with why they are deliberately trying to break up all-white areas, so basically those all-white areas will quit voting exclusively Republican. One of the most sinister things that's coming is all of these foreclosed homes, that the millions of foreclosed homes that have been created over the past 5 years of Obama. You got to know where to find this stuff on the internet and through other sources. But
let me give you a real life, you know, a situation I'm personally aware of. You know, my friend Harry Hughes lives in Maricopa, Arizona, and that was a 98% white community until the foreclosures happened. Then certain people, speculators, came in and bought up all these foreclosed homes, and they rent them out very cheaply. And now Maricopa, Arizona is a majority black town. The whites have been displaced. They've been squeezed out.
Yeah.
And the thing of it is, there is no place left for white flight. That's always been the answer. Whites have never wanted to confront. They've never wanted to say no. So instead of dealing with this, we'll just move to a nicer neighborhood.
Right.
And there's nowhere to go anymore.
Well, in my youth, in my wilder younger days, there was supposedly a place to go. There were great white paradises, i.e. Rhodesia and South Africa. I went to Rhodesia and I lived in South Africa as well. And I found that while they were wonderful places, I will always be glad that I saw them before they were destroyed. But even they weren't quite what they were cracked up to be. And now they're gone. You see, one of the purposes of the creation of the Northwest Republic will be to provide just that. White people have got to have a country of our own. Some place where we can go, or if you want to put it this way, just plain flee for safety. Because there's no place like that left on the face of the globe. We have to create it.
Well, I think you're right there, and I don't think that our government is serving us. And one of the things that's alarmed me greatly is, you know, I watch the mainstream media. I'm seeing all these stories about this knockout game thing. And I don't know if that is a government psyop in order to create greater racial tension, or if it's something else. This is really a phenomena where the blacks are becoming more feral. They're reverting to the state of nature, their savagery.
My personal guess is that that's just literally a game that our African-American brethren thought up on the streets, and they've been doing it for quite a while, and I've noticed that it didn't start getting any kind of real publicity in any of the media at all, including Drudge Report, until such time as it started happening in Crown Heights and Williamsburg in certain areas of Philadelphia, and they started knocking out Jews. Then, all of a sudden, it was front page news.
I noticed that as well. I watched some rabbi. I was someplace, and I saw, you know, a Fox News clip on there about this guy going on about how it's against the Jews, it's against the Jews, it's against the Jews. But that's the first thing they always say.
Well, it's not just Jews that are getting slugged and attacked by these gangs. What happens is, you get your first big buck, and he takes his first shot. He tries to knock out the white individual, man or woman, and they're doing this to women too, with one blow. But if that doesn't work, if the guy just staggers or tries to run or something, you get four or five of them jumping all over you and beating the crap out of you. And so it's a kind of a gang sport. It's almost like some of the gang initiations they used to have a few years ago. But one of the other things I've noticed is I tend to read liberal blog sites, a few of them anyway, Huffington Post, Salon Magazine, so forth, and they are desperately trying to either ignore it or claim that it's some kind of racist hoax. No, none of this is happening, but they're not getting away with it because the blacks have decided that they like it, and they keep on doing it. And it's getting more and more embarrassing and more impossible for the liberal media to pretend that it's not happening. And so it's like it's slipping beyond their control. And notice this as well. I think this is part of the Obamacare mess. I don't think they realized that Obamacare was going to be such a dog's dinner as it's turned out to be. And I do have a certain sense that, at least in the media sector of things, events are slipping beyond their control, and I think our tyrants have fallen victim to one of the occupational hazards of being a tyrant, and that is their inability to control events. These people that rule us, in addition to being incompetent and evil, are not capable of carrying out and creating the type of 1984-style tyranny that they dream of. And so I'm actually, believe it or not, somewhat more hopeful than I was even a year ago, that I think things may be getting to the point, Mike, where events are simply starting to slip out of the dictatorship's control. And that will leave white people a window of opportunity if we have the intelligence and the courage and the will to take it.
Well, things have to get worse before people wake up. You know, I had another guest last night. Richard Allen Miller was on. He was talking about the CIA doesn't need mind control. We have television. And as long as you have that boob tube plugged in, as long as you watch it, it puts you into an altered state of consciousness. And you just sit there and you're pacified and you do nothing.
Oh, yeah.
And so I've been, you know, cut off from TV pretty much for a couple of months now. And I'm so much happier. The tone of my mood has gone up because it's not all this fear porn all the time. That's what they sell. They sell death, destruction, and fear. This is going to happen to you sometime soon. And my state of mind has been better without TV than it is with TV.
Well, I haven't had cable for 5-6 years now. Unfortunately, some of the things that my work forces me to watch on the internet are just as bad. But there's no question in my mind that there is such a thing as an electronic drug. Chemical drugs like alcohol, heroin, and cocaine and whatnot alter your mind through chemical processes when ingest them. But when you stare at a television screen or an internet screen, depending on what's on it, what you're doing is you're bombarding your brain with electronic signals instead of a chemical compound. But it has the same effect. Electronic irradiation, if you want to call it, can alter your consciousness. It does tend to put you into sort of a fugue state. I'm sure we're all familiar with the experience of the image of the white couch potato sitting on his sofa and he's got the remote in his hand. He's just clicking, 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 going channel after channel, all 157 or 450 channels, 7 channels, whatever he's got. He's changing the images roughly every 15, 20 seconds. And what he's doing is he's bombarding his brain with this electronic goop. I think television especially does have that effect. It literally turns your brain to tapioca pudding. When Rush Limbaugh refers to skulls full of mush, he may be talking quite literally. They now believe there's good foundation for this idea that excessive cell phone use can cause brain cancer because you've got that thing right up against your head and it's irradiating your brain with electronic and auditory signals. And so I think that TV is not just bad propaganda and bad entertainment and bad cess generally. I think TV is a drug, and unfortunately millions and millions and millions of white Americans are addicted to it.
Well, I agree, and I think that's how people pass their time, and I think they put their children in front of it at an early age. And I think really that the TV set has more influence over how our children are raised than the parents themselves these days. And
the electronic babysitter,
And it's just go turn on the TV. Well, I don't care if it's the Muppets or whatever. It's the same thing. It gets you sitting there watching. It gets you sitting there distracted. And it shuts down your brain so that the brain doesn't think.
Well, white families with children don't want them watching things like The Muppets or Sesame Street anymore because that has become just total, complete left-wing, interracial, multicultural propaganda. If I had a young child in my charge, I would not let them watch Sesame Street or some of these children's programs because the liberal establishment is beginning the indoctrination now at infancy almost.
Well, they are, and I don't understand what, well, first of all, I don't get it. I don't understand why you would want to breed that interracial, multicultural thing, which is really, I find sort of abhorrent. That's personally, I just don't get it. I have no animosity towards other racial groups, whether it's Chinese or blacks or anybody. I don't care. I just want to be around people who are like me.
Yeah.
And I want to have grandkids that look like me.
The left always say that we hate. They call us haters. I mean, this idea of hating someone because their skin happens to be a different color is ludicrous. It's not who these people are that we despise. It's what they do. I ain't nothing against someone simply because his skin happens to be black. I do have something against what blacks do. I do have something against the effect that they have had on our history and on our culture and on our lives. It's not black skin color that whites have to be afraid of. It's their violence. It's their drugs. It's their almost contagious ignorance. It's the way they drag everything down to their level, including the public schools and white children. And it's just, you get this phenomenon of young white kids who think it's cool now to be black. They see blacks getting away with stuff in the schools, and so they think that's the way to get over. I have a personal saying that I tell my own people, and that is racism is not caused by upbringing. It's not caused by prejudice. Racism is caused by contact with non-white races. The more contact that any group of white people have with other races, especially blacks and mestizos, the more so-called prejudice and racism there is. This is one reason why various movement groups have always found it fairly hard, actually, to organize in places like Iowa and rural Wisconsin and New England and so forth, because they're all too white. The local people there have no personal experience.
They don't understand it until they live in the middle of it.
Exactly. On the contrary, the greatest successes that we've ever had in street organizing and creating a ruckus have been in places like Chicago and Boston during the busing protests and things like Forsyth County, Georgia, when the blacks were being forcibly brought in to integrate the area. And it's where white people are confronted with blacks and they can't run away that we have been able to strike a chord in our organizing efforts.
Well, that's the issue, and that's really why, you know, as far as, you know, your books and the movement that you fictionalize in the books, that's what's going to make it happen, is because there is no place left to run. You know, white flight is over. There's no place to go, and you want to talk about white flight. Look what happened to Detroit. When the whites left, look at Detroit. I mean, they are a bankrupt city. They're a failed city. And the only thing different about Detroit and Haiti is that it's colder in Detroit.
Yeah, right. I don't know if you heard this week's Radio Free Northwest, which is my own podcast, but I talk on there about the Theodore Wafer case. This was happening in early November. Theodore Wafer shot and killed a drunken, screaming, cursing, abusive 19-year-old black female who apparently she was driving drunk. They found later when they examined her body that her blood alcohol level was 0.218, which is about four times the legal limit. And apparently she wrecked her car, and she goes running up on this white man's porch, starts pounding on the door and screaming and demanding to be let in and just generally acting like a berserk African-American acts. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, I think, and there were, apparently were some children in the house. And anyway, this guy, Theodore Wafer, he's 54 years old, he ended up shooting this person as she was smashing the window and trying to climb into the house. And now he is in prison or in jail. He's waiting trial, and his life is over. And the point I tried to make on my podcast was, what the hell was this man still doing living in Wayne County, Michigan?
Well, there you go. All right, Harold, we got to take a break. Our bumper music is coming up here, so we're going to have a short break. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes more with Harold Covington. Stick with us, folks. Well, good evening and welcome back. This is Mike Harris on RentsRadio.com. Today is Thursday, December 5th, 2013. My guest this evening is author and social commentator Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back.
Great.
So let me get this straight. This guy, 54-year-old guy, one of the last holdouts, what was a white neighborhood, now has been taken over by blacks. There's some traffic altercation. Black woman gets out of the car. She's drunk. She's bumptious. She's loud. She's rowdy. Comes on his porch trying to break into his house through his window, and he shoots her, and he's in jail.
Of course. This is Obama's America. Man is poor and white and male. There is no place to turn for justice. It's what I've been telling people the past couple of podcasts I've done is that what you need to do wherever you're living right now is you need to open your window at night, and if you can hear them, if you can hear the booga 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 of the blacks, if you can hear the gabble of Spanish, if you can hear their, you know, boom boxes and their monkey music and their salsa music from their lowriders, then you are too close. You are in danger. You need to get the hell out of there, and I don't care what your excuse is, poverty or sentimental attachment to a neighborhood or a job or anything. Nothing justifies remaining in that kind of danger. If you can look out your window during the day and see them on the street, they can see you. And eventually somebody's going to notice your white face peeping out the window, and the word's going to get out on the street that there are white people living at such and such an address or in such and such an apartment. And one day or one night, they're going to come calling. They're going to kick in the door. They're going to come into your home to steal, because that is how non-whites view white people these days. We are victims. We are all supposed to be rich.
No. We're chickens to be plucked.
Exactly. Livestock. Hogs to be slaughtered. And in a way, that's, I'm sorry to say this, but in a way that's not too inaccurate a description. Americans for generations now, a couple of generations have been, or white Americans anyway, have been kind of hogs slopping at the trough, and we're so overjoyed to be slopping at the trough of American consumer goods and the American lifestyle and have all that lovely consumer mud to wallow in that when the butcher comes into our pen and grabs one of us and we're carried off squealing to the butcher's block to have our throats cut, the other livestock just sort of shrug and stick their snouts back in the trough. That has to stop. I read older anti-communist stuff, and a man described in one book I read as to how he became an anti-communist. He was in Moscow on some kind of journalistic assignment or something, And he said it wasn't anything specific, it wasn't any one particular act, but one night he listened out his window and he heard screaming in the night, and all of a sudden he understood. We have lost the ability as a people to hear the screams, the death cries of our own people as one by one we are dragged away to the slaughter. We have got to learn to listen. We've got to start hearing the screams of our fellow white people as they are destroyed by this evil system, and we have got to do something to stop it. And I'm not referring to pulling a little lever in a voting booth, and I probably better shut up now before
I'm glad you brought that up, because another one of my guests who's on frequently, a guy named Jim Kerwin, sent me a YouTube. He forwarded me a YouTube, and it says, When You Should Shoot a Cop. And it talks through the whole situation about how those in power, we've got a bunch of corrupt politicians who are hiring a bunch of thugs to implement something on us called law. It doesn't matter if the law is moral. Doesn't matter if the law is immoral. It's someone telling you what to do. It is tyrannical in effect. And if you go along and you don't resist, then you're subject to death. If they come along and get you, first thing a cop does is calls five more cops. If you resist, you can't resist a cop a little bit. You have to either resist completely and overpower him, or you have to submit to whatever they're going to do to you. And it was a very, very interesting video. It's like 9 minutes long, and it's really terrifying, but it makes a very logical argument that we as a people have the right to defend ourselves, even from our own government and even from the goons. That just because a politician signs a piece of paper that they call a law doesn't mean we have to obey it. And
well, that's why the Founding Fathers gave us the Second Amendment. It wasn't to fight Indians. It wasn't to hunt turkeys for Thanksgiving. They gave us the Second Amendment so that if it ever came down to the crunch, Americans would be able to resist their own tyrannical government and do what the Founding Fathers themselves had done between 1776 and 1783 and overthrow that government. That is why the Second Amendment is there. Cops and police are central to this whole problem. Without this army of police and FBI agents, DHS agents, Secret Service and all the alphabet soup, and without the military, Obama and his gang would not last a week. They are the people, the muscle men, who keep Obama in power. Without them,
it's not Obama. I mean, I look at the Bush administration, Bush Cheney. That was a horrible administration. I go back before them and look at Clinton. A horrible administration. I go back to Bush 41. Another horrible administration. We haven't had a decent president in this country since they murdered Kennedy in Daley Plaza 50 years ago.
Oh, believe me, I am no fan of Jugear's Bush. In fact, I don't know if you've noticed, but my personal blog, which is called Thought Crime, the actual URL, which I will slip in here, is downwithjugears.blogspot.com. It was started back in the Bush days. Have you noticed, though, that they keep getting worse? I am no particular great fan of Ronald Reagan. He had a lot wrong with him, but I do consider Ronald Reagan to be the last truly American president in his
Let me say this about Reagan. And at the time, I was a Reagan fan. But if I look back historically, Ronald Reagan did a couple of great disservices to this country. One of them was that amnesty for the illegals who crossed the border, and they promised us there would only be 800,000 one time only. We didn't get 800,000. We got 3.4 million illegals who were granted citizenship. And he set a precedent for future amnesties that we're now having to deal with. And amnesty is not the answer. The last time they said 800,000, we got 3.4 million. They've been sticking to this 11 million illegal aliens in this country. They've used that number for 25 years now. Having lived on the border, having lived near the Vico Valley, I watched the traffic. There's 7,500 to 10,000 of them a night coming across that border every night. And so my estimate is the number is north of 50 million illegal aliens in this country.
The thing is, nobody knows. You've noticed that since Bush won, it just seems to be getting worse and worse because it's like they're dropping the mask. And now we've got this case where, I'm no fan of George W. Bush by any means, but to my mind, Obama has done something I never thought could be possible. He actually makes Bush look good by comparison. Obama right now is ruling dictatorially. He is, in essence, completely ignoring Congress, and he's becoming exactly what the Constitution is designed to prevent. And so what I want to know is, after Obama, since we now live in effectively a one-party state, how much worse is it going to get? It looks like it's Hillary's turn next, and oh, God.
My guess is that the 2016 election is going to be a contest between Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton. But let me speak up for Obama on one thing that I like that he's done, and that has been the rapprochement with Iran in defiance of Israel, and the rapprochement with Syria. We avoided that war in defiance of Israel. So anybody who defies Israel on foreign policy, I can't completely disparage. And we got a break coming up, Harold. We'll be right back. I'll wait for your response on the other side. So stick with us, folks. Be right back. More with Harold Covington. And my guest this evening is Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back. And I'll wait your response on Obama's handling of foreign policy in defiance of Israel. Because you look at our government. I mean, we've been so infiltrated by the Israelis. I mean, if JFK had not been murdered, AIPAC wouldn't exist, and Israel would not have a conduit to stuff money into our politicians' pockets. We would have an independent United States free of Israeli influence.
My personal feeling on that, on the Obama-Iran thing, it's possible that the administration, the dictatorship as I should call it, it's possible that the dictatorship is making a virtue out of necessity. My personal gut feeling is that, remember last year when there was all this saber rattling about how, oh, they were going to bomb Iran and they were going to do this and they were going to do that and stop their nuclear program and so forth. I think at some point the Joint Chiefs of Staff went to Obama and just said, hey, look, Mr. President, we're going to have a quiet word of prayer here, because I do not believe that the United States military at present is in any condition to take on a country the size of Iran with the comparatively powerful military that they have, especially when they've got Russia standing behind them. I think this is one of the reasons that they didn't intervene in Syria.
That is absolutely the key. See, what's happened in this country, our Department of Defense has become the largest donor of corporate welfare to these defense contractors. You know, the example I use time and again is that we're still using aircraft carriers as our main way of projecting force around the globe. Mm-hmm. Russia has one aircraft carrier. But they went through their hard times after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and they still had to defend their country. So they came up with weapon systems that are really efficient and work very, very well. They've got the S-300s, which are already in Iran and in Syria. They have the S-400s, which we're just now getting the specifications for about how fast they can go. It's somewhere between Mach 7 and Mach 9. And on that aircraft carrier, their sole aircraft carrier that only has 12 planes, they've got the S-500 system, which is still a mystery to our Department of Defense. But it's very powerful stuff. It's been guesstimated that they can sink an entire carrier battle group in under 20 minutes. And the U.S. would not stand a chance, because we have invested in corporate welfare, buying inefficient systems, overpriced in order to keep, you know, the Pritzker and Crown families from Chicago, who, people don't know this, are the ones who control the majority of our defense contractors from, you know, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, General Dynamics, et al. They own significant holdings in all of those. And so it's Jewish control over the U.S. defense industry, and ergo, we invest in that, and we spend money on wars that we don't win, because the profits keep coming in. The longer we can take that war on, the more profitable it is for certain moneyed interests.
Well, almost like the George Orwell described perpetual warfare in 1984, but I don't think that it is this type of so-called surgical airstrike that they've been talking about to take out the Iranian nuclear facilities and so forth is actually possible. And I think somebody in the Pentagon has sense enough to realize it. And the fact is that I imagine our enemies, well, if you want to call the Russians our enemies, I don't think the Russians are the enemies of the American people. I think they're enemies of the regime. But they realize it as well. The fact is that the United States has more or less exhausted itself militarily in Iraq and Afghanistan. And from now on, their saber rattling in the Middle East is going to be more or less a paper tiger. Now, even a paper tiger can be dangerous, especially if they do something stupid. The wild card, of course, is this crazy Jew Netanyahu in Israel. He is now allying with the Saudis, who are petrified of the Iranians becoming the big dogs in the region. And it's just possible that these crazy Heems, they might strike just purely to kick over the apple cart. It's kind of like the old adage, when you have a totally losing hand in poker and you're about to lose everything you have, you just kick over the table. And that wild card could still set off a conflagration over there, including the closing of the Straits of Hormuz and the loss of, you know, one-third of the world's oil supply. It could still happen. But I personally see this thing that Obama has done, people that are, let me put it this way, the people that are running Obama have done with Iran, they have accepted the fact that there is going to be a nuclear Iran and there's nothing they can do about it. Now that, when you really think about it, is a really significant thing. These idiots in Washington, D.C. have finally started to get a glimmer that there is a limitation of their power and they can't just bomb their way to get what they want. But unfortunately, Israel might not have got the memo, and Israel is so terrified of a nuclear Iran, not because the Iranians would launch nuclear warheads on Tel Aviv.
Let me tell you what the issue here is and why Israel is powerless. Because if we adopt a policy of a nuclear-free Middle East, and Iran gives up their nukes, Israel has to give up theirs. I have long been advocating that if the U.S. needs to be militarily engaged in the Middle East, the thing to do is to occupy Israel and force a nuclear disarmament upon them, very similar to how we occupied Japan after World War II, and force them to be disarmed. We could do two things. We could protect the Israelis from the slaughter that they have earned because of their bad deeds, their terrorism, against the entire world. And we could protect the Palestinians and bring them to an equitable solution that works for all parties. And that
I always thought, if I was just going to be like an ordinary conservative president of the United States and not the raving radical that I am, I would become president and I would say, okay, look, Israel, okay, fine, you can exist. We're not going to drive the Jews into the sea, but you're not going to take all the Palestinians out in the desert and dump them. We're going to apply the same solution to Israel that the world forced on South Africa and Rhodesia. You're going to have one man, one vote. It's not going to be a two-state solution. It's going to be a one-state solution. We'll call it Palestine, and you're all going to get along, and you're going to be forced by the world community to hand over power to this hated minority that you've been oppressing for the past 40 years. And, of course, we all know how well that's worked in South Africa. I suppose, by the way, a little bit on another topic, I suppose you heard that Mandela died.
Yes, I did. I was going to ask you about that as well, because I'm expecting a lot of bloodletting of whites in South Africa as a result of Mandela's death. I think, what's his name, Luima, I forget his first name, Jacob Zuma is the current president, and I think that the hostilities towards whites in South Africa is going to go off the charts, and we're going to see bloodletting like no one's ever seen, and people should take alarm at this. The savages are out. There's a reason they were portrayed the way they were in the Tarzan movies.
Well, I have lived in South Africa under apartheid, and I remember a wonderful nation, and like I say, it's one of the best experiences of my life, but I'm going to say something very cruel and mean and cynical right now. I'm sorry to say this, but I have not too much sympathy for the South Africans because they voted their country out of existence March 17, 1992. They committed an act of capital stupidity. It was not necessary. South Africa manufactured and produces everything they need. The apartheid regime, so-called, could have lasted forever. And they are now, it'd be 20 years on, but they've been paying the price for that with their rape rooms and their murders of farmers and slow decay of their country. But what you got to bear in mind is South Africa was a completely industrialized, completely modern Western nation when I was there. It's taken the Kaffirs 20 years to destroy it, even to the level that they have, also because the ANC is smart enough to know that they've got to keep a few whites around as sort of technical serfs or whatever to keep the machinery running and keep the infrastructure running. But eventually, that bill from March 17, 1992, when the whites of South Africa voted themselves out of existence as a nation, that bill is going to come due. Now, I'm hoping that some of the Boers will at least be able to fight them off enough to establish, possibly reestablish the original Boer republics, the Transvaal and the Orange Free State. I'm hoping to see that. But I don't know, because...
Harold, let's go back to your book, Freedom Sons, because you mentioned the exact same thing, that in the USA, fast forward 50 years, there's going to be a few whites left around to keep things running, but it's going to be majority black or majority dark brown anyway.
Majority blood-colored. Well,
and they're not able to maintain a technological society on their own.
No, they can't. And yet, in Rhodesia, they were so stupid and so full of hate for the white man that they destroyed their own food supply. When I was in Rhodesia, we exported food to the rest of Africa. You could actually buy a better Mazoe orange in Cape Town or London than you could in Salisbury, because the best crops and the best tobacco, the best fruit, the best grain, everything, etc., was exported. And as ridiculous as it sounds, we were exporting food to the very black nations that wanted to kill us. And the people in charge thought, well, they'll never be stupid enough to try and wipe us out if we're feeding them. And no, that's not how it works with blacks. We are going to face the same situation in this country. We are beginning to face it now. I don't know if you read the liberal blogs and liberal websites, but they are crowing. They are laughing. They are wetting themselves with joy that the white man is now an effective minority in this country. And we are already an electoral minority. I think the 2016 election is going to be very bitter and very interesting to watch, but I still think the Democrats are going to win because they've created their own underclass of blacks, browns, and white dumbasses who will continue to vote them in. And
we're headed
for that same situation here.
They cannot sustain the country. They don't create anything. They don't create value. They don't create wealth. They don't create products. All they do is consume. And this Obamacare thing has got me scared to death. And I'm telling you, folks, you don't want to be part of this. How can they expect to add 80 million people to the healthcare system without expanding the scope of the healthcare system? So you're going to get less.
That's about what we're going to lose in January when the employer cancellations start. About 80 million Americans.
There's already been 5 million. More than that. I think we're looking at the collapse of the American healthcare system. I don't think there's going to be any saving unless they stop Obamacare cold. I don't see that happening. Well, Harold, I hear a bumper music coming up here. Any final comments before you go?
Yeah, I want to sneak in my website. If you want to learn more about the Northwest Front and about the plan to create a white homeland in the Pacific Northwest, an independent sovereign nation for white people only, then go to northwestfront.org. You can email me at nwnet@earthlink.net, and we'll be glad to send you a copy of the White Book, which is our party manual, and a packet of literature, including our magazine, Northwest Observer. And you can find out about the people who are really trying to do some stuff.
We're running out of bumper music, but
okay.
Look into it. It's worthwhile. And buy his book, because it's a great read. It's fun. You'll like it. Anyway, thanks, folks. I'll be back tomorrow night. Everybody have a great evening. Take care. Bye-bye.